Yes, we're back once again for the 268th time, Parish of the Patriots. I'm excited to be here. I hope y'all are too. I'm really glad y'all joined us this way. I hope we'll have a great discussion. Always look forward to having a great discussion. By the way, this is one of those, if I do say so myself, the past couple of Friday installments of the Daily Nationalist, I think I'm getting in the groove, and then I'm kind of like, man, I'm just not there yet. Past couple Friday Daily Nationalists, I've called it the return of Funny Fridays, back to the lighthearted, and I've just been having some fun with it, you know. I think some of it is just, I've kind of struggled with it, and I think a lot of it is just overthinking it, you know, just now I'm just having fun with it. And I think the past couple of Friday Daily Nationalists, if you haven't checked them out, I thought they were funny. I thought it was a lot of fun and just some kind of funny stuff there, so I'm kind of excited about it. Of course, this has always been the show. Sven gets back and maybe programming kind of gets back on track. Not going to lie, I'm kind of looking forward to just getting back to the Parish of the Patriots and maybe one Daily Nationalist a week. Sounds good. Get a little burned out sometimes, but this show will always be the centerpiece of what I'm doing. You may look at that and be like, man, that ain't much of a centerpiece, but I think it is. If you're new, if you just discovered this, maybe you, I don't know how you would happen upon it. But if you did, I'm glad you're here. Hopefully you'll join the large group, the returning members of the congregation that come back every week. Hopefully. If you are new, we do have a Christian-specific segment, roughly the halfway point of the show. I know you're thinking, I don't want to hear none of that preaching stuff. Listen, it'll be something good for you. I think you'll enjoy it. It ain't going to be like what you think. Regular members of the congregation, they know. If you do get something out of the show, I always appreciate you drop something in the plate. We pass offering plate around. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. We have the ultimate. We deal exclusively in the ultimate privacy coin here at the Parish of the Patriots, and that would be snail mail. That's it. That's all we got. We ain't got no crypto. I know, I've been bringing this up because I forget about it, and then someone gets confused. There is a link down there that says we can now accept donations with Bitcoin, Ethereum, whatever. Those are Sven's addresses that he put up before we went away. You know, they'll be here when he gets back. But I don't have access to those, so that's not for this show specifically. I'm just telling you, we do snail mail. That's it. That's it. Snail mail. The ultimate privacy coin. The blockchain. The blockchain is the multiple hands of diversity that your notes and letters go through to come and reach us here. See, that's great. It's great. And it's always fun. It's always fun because I get these, you know, when I get a letter, you know, I'll get an envelope, you know, because I always look to see, you know, where did that come from, you know, like Mr. T comes from Mr. T comes from a very unique place. GPD, this is listener supported mailbag. You like the way I just segued into that. GPD, great work. Keep it up, Mr. T. Thank you, Mr. T, with your very unique address. You see, but it is, I get envelopes and I'll get one and it's like, you know, from England, you know, or Spain or, you know, wherever. It's always fun. You know, I get envelopes. From all over the place. I get envelopes from, you just wouldn't believe. I just personally, I find it interesting. I always like to look. Let's see here. Hey, Gramps, here's some bucks for the show. I'm currently experiencing clown world fatigue. Hope you are faring better. And that's from Peter. Thank you very much, Peter. Somebody else. I was like, oh, look, this came from here. See, part of that privacy coin thing is, I ain't even getting specific where from. There's one person in this whole country named this name. We know who you are. Clown world fatigue. It is easy to get fatigued. This is where the whole, like I mentioned, the whole Funny Fridays thing coming back. You just gotta laugh at it. You know, this is where the humor comes in. I do. I praise God for blessing me with a sense of humor. That is a gift from God. You know? You got Christian people, you know, like when I was a kid growing up, a lot of older Christian people, like, I don't know, you know, how do I want to put it? Being stodgy and like not laughing at anything, you know, in their minds, it made them more pious, you know. I am a Christian person. I do not crack a smile at anything. God gave us a sense of humor. You know, Clem Wolf fatigue, I feel you. No, we all feel like that. Especially the fact that we're always being lied to. I mean, you know, something happens. A happening happens in the world. And the first thing they do through the media is vomit their lies all over you. And you have to sit there and pick through the vomit that they speak, the projectile vomit that these news people, these journalists, vomit all over you. It's very offensive. And you have to, then you're forced to pick through the vomit to try to find little bits, the chunks of truth that might be in there. And then you got to put it all together. And when you take what information you can find online and a little bit of truths in their lies and you put together a picture, then these liars turn around and they mock you. They say, oh, you're a conspiracy theory. You're a conspiracy theorist, rather. Oh, you're saying those things. You don't have any evidence because we're hiding the evidence from you. How dare you? The government is hiding the evidence of whatever they did, whatever is really happening, and we're lying to you. And here you are coming up with a theory. The nerve of you people. How dare you come up with theories? Of course, the part they leave out is, if they wouldn't lie to us about everything, we wouldn't have to theorize. Well, of course, we have to make up a theory. We have to pick through your projectile vomit and figure out what the hell's going on and try to piece it together ourselves, because we all know that they're lying to us. It's very tiresome, very fatiguing. It's constant. They just lie about everything, you know? And their narratives, it never ends, you know? Just the little things. It'll wear you down if you let it. I don't know how anybody keeps their sanity and like partakes of Western entertainment, like at all. I don't, you know, I mean, I watch the local news on mute. People say, like, well, what do you watch on TV besides anime? And the answer is the local news, so I can get the weather. And I watch the 90-second network narrative of your world in 90 seconds. So, you know, I just have an idea of what this week's lies are. And that's it. So most of it's on mute. You know, little thing, you know, like literally every commercial that comes on. There's not going to be white people there. You know, and if it is going to be white people there, virtually guaranteed is going to be a white woman with a black man. You know, it's all tiresome. It's not about, you know, that just means you hate black people. No, it does not. It just means I'm so tired of it. Look, you don't have to just shove this in our faces all the time. Look, I know people do interracial relationships. I get that. I don't lay awake at night worrying about it. I really don't. But you don't have to be like trying to force feed it and shove it down my throat 24/7. It's very obvious. It's all very tiresome. There's a white guy in there. He's going to be the goofy stooge that's made fun of. You know, it's not even funny. It'd be okay if it was a humorous thing, but it's not. It's always with this malice, you know, always with this malice. Back in the day, I always remember this, because when you get older, you do lots of stories that start off with back in the day, back in my time, back in the day. I always enjoyed watching the comedian. I don't even remember what the show was, but it was a show featuring up and coming comedians on the BET, on the Black Entertainment Television. Because the one thing I think I kind of share with black people is their sense of humor. Like, if you give me a choice, say, okay, Grandpa Dan, you can only listen to a comedian, non-white comedian. I'm going to listen to black people all day long. Jewish comedians, I don't get that at all. I don't find anything funny about it. I most of it is just some sort of toilet humor, or, you know, just like whining and kvetching. I remember when being a kid, and like at that time, you know, Woody Allen. Oh, Woody Allen is so funny. I remember hearing the Woody Allen. He's so funny. All his movies are hilarious. And then I saw the first Woody Allen movie. I can't even tell you what it was. You know, I sat through the first Woody Allen movie, and I'm like, there's nothing funny. This is just this guy whining, kvetching. And it's not like at that time I was like, oh my gosh, how Jewish, you know, it just wasn't funny. Generally speaking, black people humor, it lines up kind of with mine. You know, I remember back in the day, I'd watched the comedians, up and coming comedians on the BET, and it was funny. And some of them went on to become, you know, big name comedians. But I would watch the comedians. And of course, you know, I'm a white person. I'm sitting here watching the Black Channel. And, you know, they would tell jokes about white people. You know, it wasn't constantly. And it was funny. Why? Because there wasn't any malice involved. You know, they would tell these jokes about white people. You know, what, you white people, I just don't understand white people. You know, and then they do their, imitation. They would do their imitation, you know, of how white people talk. My gosh, you know, and I wasn't offended by that. It's like, I wouldn't understand, like, if a black person be offended, you know, if they heard white people doing comedy or humor, you know, and imitating how black people talk, you know, how I'd be talking like that, you know, because that's just the way it sounds to other people. I would watch this and they would, you know, do their imitation of how white people. So I wasn't offended by that. That's just, I thought it was funny because that's the way they perceive. And they would talk about funny things, you know, make fun of funny things as they perceived it that white people do. And I thought it was humorous because there's some truth in it, you know, and it's like you can understand, like, from their different perspective, when they look at white people doing things a certain way, it's funny to them. And I could laugh along with it. The point is, I could laugh along with it. There wasn't any malice involved. They're just talking about the difference between them and white people. There's nothing ugly about it. There's another one of these things we've lost. So much of comedy, mainstream comedy, you get now. There's like this hostility, this ugliness involved, you know? This is malice involved. It doesn't have to be that way. So much now is tainted. So much of what we see in society in this clown world now, which adds to this fatigue, is the level of malice. And I think a lot of times that flies under our radar. You know, it flies under people's radar why it gets so tiring. And it gets tiring because now there's a level of maliciousness now. You know, everything is white people's fault. Your microaggressions are, you know, destroying black people's lives. It's just stupid. It is. The narratives that get promoted, you know, and yeah, certain prominent black people will parrot those things. But I mean, come on, they didn't come up with that. You know, they didn't. These are narratives being promoted. They don't have the power and the ability to go out and publicly promote these widespread narratives. Just the same as we do. I don't have the ability. Neither do you. We don't have that kind of power. That's what I'm saying. I'm not running them down. I'm saying I don't have that kind of power. Neither do you. Otherwise, we'd be promoting our narratives on network TV. But we don't have that kind of power. Neither do black people. Your run-of-the-mill black people. You know, these are promoted. And there's this level of malice. And it's not funny. You know, it's not funny. There's a difference between, you know, looking at people who are different and making jokes about the way they look to you because they're so much different than yourself, and having maliciousness involved, you know, a spirit of maliciousness that you really dislike those people for their differences. The point is, this is all part of that fatigue. And I'm telling you, the best escape, the best way to deal with it is to just laugh at it because it's so stupid. You know, I mean, look, people get it. You know, this nonstop promoting of these things, yes, they have a certain amount of success with it. But at the same time, look, people get it. They understand this is forced. You know, when was the last time, like, they have these award shows and they give all these awards out to this movie, and then, like, nobody you talk to has bothered to go and see this movie. They're just preaching to the choir and patting each other on the back and giving each other awards. It's not, you just gotta laugh at it. It's the only way, you know? And I don't know. We have to deal with, you know, our own lives and navigating our way through clown world, you know? And I'm gonna do it like how do I wanna put this? A unique Christian perspective here. I'm not preaching early here. I purposely put the Christian specific content in that section of the show because I'm aware that some people just flat don't want to hear it, but they might enjoy the other parts of the show. So I'm not preachy early here, but this is from my personal Christian perspective of how I deal with this. And that is one of the things that the Lord has taught me, or I've come to understand in the Lord as I look around this world, is that 99% of this bullshit is not my problem. Yeah, not my problem. You just have an easier time in life when you really pick through and you understand. You know what? You look at things, you get concerned about things, you say, you know what? Not my problem. And I'm not talking about just being apathetic and not caring about anything and whatnot. I'm just talking about being realistic. It's not my problem. It's not my problem. Somebody will say, you're a Christian believer, ain't you? Yeah. And usually this somebody, by the way, is a non-believer. And they say, well, aren't you supposed to be worried? If you believe all that, aren't you worried about all these people that supposedly are going to hell? Not my problem. It's not my problem. God never told me I gotta save all these spurgs that want to go to hell. I don't care. I'm a Christian believer. And if some atheist spurg is just bound and determined to go to hell, you know, get on the rails. Get on the bullet train. I don't give a shit. Not my problem. You got to look at a lot of things. And again, I'm not talking about not taking care of what you need to take care of. I'm not talking about not educating yourself. I'm not talking about that. But I'm just saying, looking at things, looking at the world around you, and a lot of this, not my problem. When you understand that so much of what you concern yourself with and your life is actually bullshit, that's not your problem. And when you start adapting to that, people get upset about that. You know why? Because most people want to make their problems into your problems. Things you get stressed out at work or with various people you deal with in your life. When you come to understand, you get that perspective of what is and is not your issue. What is and is not your problem. You're going to start finding out that most of the things that stress you out, it's actually stuff that when you get down to it, it's not your problem. And people don't like it. You know why? Because they want their problems to be your problems so they don't have to deal with it. They want to turn their problems into your problems. How often have you wound up at your job and you're sitting there doing some work and you're all pissed off while you're doing it because you're thinking, man, I wound up doing this because I'm trying to help this guy out because he can't seem to get it done. But see, it actually originally wasn't your problem. He just successfully offloaded his problem onto you. Now, he don't have to dick with it. When you start seeing things and being like having the attitude of not my problem, people get upset because they want to make their problems your problems. They want to dump them off on you and get you to figure out how to fix them when it's not your problem. You start seeing, it's not my problem. And people get all upset and be like, you know, hey, you know, da, 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 da. And you're like, yeah, not my problem. You know, you may not answer it that way, but at the end of the day, your answer is, that's not my problem. Man, I got all this going on in my life and I just don't know what to do. And they look at you and you're like, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. You know, and they're just still looking at you like you're supposed to give them the answer when it's not your problem. I'm not saying you don't choose to be sympathetic. But if somebody's trying to get you to do something and you don't want to do it and you feel like you're being drugged into it, just stop for a minute and say, wait a minute, I'm not obligated to do this. If I don't want to do it, I'm not going to do it. Now, yeah, sure, there's things in your life that come up that you got to do that you don't feel like. I mean, that's how life is. We all get that. But a lot of the times you're doing stuff in life that at the end of the day, you actually don't have to do that. But you allow other people to offload their bullshit on you. Instead of just looking at it and going, you know what? I don't have to do that. I'm not doing that. Hey, can you help me out with this? No. No. I'm not going to help you out with that. But why not? Because I got my own stuff to do. And it's not my problem. Then they're going to be running around saying, he's such an asshole. I just needed a little help. You need a little help. You're trying to offload your work onto somebody else. Not my problem. When you come to realize, too, this feeds in. When you come to realize what other people say and think and whatever about you, it doesn't matter. It's not your problem. You can't control what other people are going to do. But if I don't go do and help this guy out, he's going to run around and tell everybody I'm a selfish asshole. So what? Good. Then those other assholes won't come to you because they all. You know, back in the day, you hear the term a mark. Back in the day, hobos that would ride the trains up and down the tracks from town to town. You know, they would go up to different random houses and beg for some food or, you know, a little handout. And if somebody said, sure, I'll give you here, I got this. Here, take this sandwich or something. So, yeah, thanks. And that hobo would go out and make an X. He'd make a mark on the curb. That way, the other hobos would know. You see, if they went up to like three doors and everybody's like, get out of here, you bum. They wouldn't make no mark. But when they hit that one house and somebody said, man, I feel sorry for you, here's a sandwich. And they go out there and they'd make a mark. And that way the other hobos would come along and they'd see the mark and they'd know that's the house to go to. They'll give you food. They'll give you some money. They'll do this. They'll go. See, that person's a mark. They go up. They'd know that that house is somebody's living there. They'll give it out. You see, it's the same way. People offload their stuff. You know, they don't communicate it directly. But when they hear from somebody that they basically could get you to do their work for them or they could get you... See, when they go around and tell everybody, you're a selfish asshole, I tried to get this guy. See, it registers with them. I better not bother trying to offload my stuff onto him because he won't do it. Move on. Go find an easier mark. We just start winnowing things out. Look, I'm talking about how to make getting through this clown world existence easier. It's difficult enough. Dealing with the things you do have to deal with because they're unpleasant things you got to do that are part of life. That's hard enough. But other people will dump their bullshit and dump their problems off on you if they can. Because then it's easier for them. I'm telling you, don't do it. It's not your problem. You don't owe them. And you sit there and you be thinking, Man, how do I tell them? I've had people say, you know, man, this person, and you know, how do I tell them that I don't want to do that? And I always just tell people, say no. And preferably say no and follow it up with what I affectionately refer to as the uncomfortable silence. Just say, nope. Uncomfortable silence. It's powerful. I'm telling you, I'm giving you one of these secrets. Giving you a secret to dealing with people in life. Nope. Uncomfortable silence. And they'll stand there and look at you. They will. They will stand there and look at you. It takes a certain amount of discipline to emotionally disconnect you. Because people stand there looking at you because they're waiting for the excuse. You know why? They're waiting for the reason. Because then they'll start negotiating. You don't want to do it. The reason is you don't want to do it. And you say, nope. Uncomfortable silence. Because if you say, no, I'm doing something that day, you know what they're going to say? Oh, well, that's fine. I don't have to do it that day. What are you doing the following Tuesday? Now they've got you hemmed up because you just said you were busy that day, whether you actually were or not. And if you say, no, I'm busy that day too, then you feel like you're looking like you're just making excuses. And they start doing this back and forth and this negotiation. And pretty soon, they working you into, just like that hobo up there banging on your door, wanting a handout. They working you into doing what you don't want to do. They know what they're doing, by the way. They're not innocent in this. They're waiting. When you give them the uncomfortable silence after no, they will stand there and wait because they're waiting for that opening so they can start negotiating. Do it. You will see what I'm talking about. They'll stand there looking at you like with big, dumb deer eyes. I'm holding my hands up like I could see it. They're looking at you, big stupid ass sheep eyes or something, like they're waiting. I'm waiting for the reason. You have to. You don't owe them a reason. You don't. It's not your problem. If you don't want to do it and it's not something that you need to do, just say nope, not going to do it. Nope. Followed with uncomfortable silence. And they'll stand there stupefied because you didn't give them something to work with. And once in a while, one of them will have the nerve to say, well, why not? This always gets me. Well, why not? Like, you're obligated. Usually the best response to that is to look at them puzzled and say, what do you mean, why not? What do you mean, why not? And then just be honest, because I don't want to. And then I'm not going to do it. Nope. And yeah, oh, but that person, then they might go off and think you're a real asshole. So what? They won't bother you anymore. Why do you care? They're actually just looking for an easy mark. Life is 100% difficult enough to deal with the stuff you have to deal with, without taking on other people's bullshit. And they will. And it ain't just work. People try to unload their emotional baggage on you. They'll try to drain you of your time. They'll try to drain you of your emotional energy. They'll try to just because whatever it is that they need because of their circumstances in their life. But you know what? That's their problem. It ain't yours. If you have a choice and you don't want to do it, just say no. Nope. There you go. Easy enough. Makes life easier. Once you get used to it, don't give an excuse. You don't owe, why do you owe this person an excuse? Here's the one. No. No. If somebody's asking you, then no. You know, no. If you don't want to, just say no. They have the nerve to ask you. They should accept that. And this is a way to, this is a good way to cull through people, their motivations. Because if they're just, you know, honestly just asking, you know, they will accept that no is, oh, no. Oh, okay. No problem. If they get offended by that, then they were just trying to work you. They were just trying to work you as an easy mark to begin with. You know, if they get offended, somebody's just honestly asking, hey, can you do this for me? Can you help me out with this or whatever? And you don't want to, and you say no, and they say, oh, okay, no problem. You know, then that person just was honestly wanting some help or something. And I'm not saying, you know, that you shouldn't help other people at all. But most of the time, people are just trying to manipulate you. They are. They're just trying to manipulate you into doing their stuff so they don't have to. When they get offended, when you say no, and then they get offended and demand a reason, that tells you everything you need to know right there. Right there, they took the mask off. You know, they took the theater mask off. When they get mad and you say no, and they get mad and emotional and they start demanding that you give them an explanation of why you're not going to handle their shit for them, you know you made the right choice. And like I say, if they do, the answer is, what do you mean? Because I don't want to. What do you mean? Why? Why do I owe you a reason? What are you talking about? Because I don't want to. What are you on about? Yeah, but then they'll go around and talk about me. Good. They'll tell all the other hobos not to come banging on your damn door. You're making life easier for yourself. They like them hobos marking people's houses. They'll go, yeah, they probably are going to go. You know what? They're going to go tell the other hobos. Don't bother with him. He's an asshole. He won't take on your stuff for you. He won't take on your emotional baggage for you. Make your life easier. I'm telling you, find out such practical information that helps you out in your day-to-day life. In your day-to-day life, you find these things right here at the Parish of the Patriots. Well, we're going to go ahead and get into the Christian-specific segment. We got to keep this show rolling. I'm telling you, we're going to keep these wheels rolling. Y'all know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. For a Christian-specific segment, this week, I think we'll probably have time to get into several different things instead of just bearing down on one topic. In the book of Luke, chapter 3, towards the end of the chapter, I'm going to spare you from reading it. I'm not going to sit here and read it. You're welcome to do so. I jotted it down for a description because I'm reading through this earlier this past week. I jot these things down. I read a Bible passage or I think, I pray on something and I think that might be something interesting to discuss with all of y'all. And I'll jot it down. I'll just jot down enough of a note to kind of remind myself what I was thinking about at the time. And my jotting down was boring lineage. But jotted down as boring lineage that most people skip. So in Luke chapter 3, towards the end, they give the lineage, the earthly lineage of Jesus Christ, starting with Joseph, going all the way back, incredibly, going all the way back to the first man, Adam. Now, this is an incredible thing when you consider that it's not like they had computers and their written records were probably, shall we say, somewhat limited. And yet, even so, at this time, what we would today look at and sneer at and say, such primitive, the primitive time. In such a time, they still were able to sit down and they could give you the lineage from Jesus Christ all the way back to the first man, Adam. I find this to be an incredible thing and an interesting thing. And I think it's interesting beyond just the fact that they were able to do this, because nobody can do it now. A man could come forward and say, I'm a direct descendant of King David of the original Israel. But he couldn't give you his lineage all the way back to David. It had been lost. You look at the years since, and we lost that. Now, from that time, and they were able to give you this lineage all the way back to the first man, Adam, it had been a long time. And yet you got this time from there forward, and nobody, the most hardcore Christian identitarian cannot give you his lineage back to whichever tribe of Israel. Now, the part of this that's interesting beyond just this observation is this tells us, I believe, this is one of the ways it tells us, that Jesus Christ was the completion of all of these things leading up to this. They were able to give you this lineage, and through all of these important people, Jesus' lineage, earthly lineage, traced back to King David and ultimately back to the first man, Adam. And then it stops. For all practical purposes, this ability to track this lineage stops after Jesus. And this tells us that the Lord completed what he was doing. In other words, it's like it gives us a chapter, or if you look at it as the Bible, a book. The Lord closed that book. From Adam up to Jesus Christ was one section. This was what God was doing. And with Christ, he closed the book. He finished that. That all goes into this section, if that makes sense. If somebody were to come up, if somebody were to proclaim the Messiah has come, somebody in denial of Jesus Christ were to come forward and say, no, the Messiah has come. The Messiah is out here. He's shown up. This guy is it. This is what we've been waiting for. That person would not be able to give you the lineage back to the first man, Adam. They wouldn't be able to do that. They would have to make it up. They'd have to lie. They don't have that. They don't have that lineage. This is just interesting to me because it does tell us, again, it puts everything in its own section, from Adam to Jesus Christ. And then with Jesus Christ, God completed what he was doing in that segment of time. He completed it. That's closed. That book is closed there. That work is done. There's nothing there's not someone else coming until Jesus Christ returns. There is no other. It's just the Lord completed that work, and being able to see that lineage tells us that this is what God was doing and he completed that. And the fact that we don't have that after Jesus Christ, that level. Again, you can't pick anybody today. And I don't care how much, what computer system you use and genealogy tracking, you're going to get lost. There's nobody today. You cannot go and trace yourself, any man, all the way back to the first man, Adam. You're just not going to be able to do it. And I think this tells us something, again, that the Lord, what he was doing, something specific from Adam to Jesus, and he completed that work. It's just an interesting thing I thought I'd share with y'all and look at. Because, I mean, a lot of the things we go through in the Bible, like in the Old Testament, or like I say, this boring lineage thing that most people skip over, because it is. You're reading through and you're reading where Jesus is, proclaiming these things and doing these amazing teachings, and he's healing the sick and curing the lame and raising the dead. And then you get to this section, was the son of who? So-and-so, was the son of so-and-so, who begat so-and-so, and going all the way back to Adam. And it's like, I don't care. I don't know who any of these people were. You skip over it. You run into it in the Old Testament. They are big on lineage. They'll say, okay, this guy was the son of this guy. And they'll go all the way back. And, and it's boring. And people tend to skip over it. And I just think it's interesting because the parts we skip over sometimes, they're relevant. They're relevant. They mean something. And they mean more than just simply keeping a historical record. It tells us something if we dig around and look for it. You look back on these things. I was thinking, and I've touched on this before, but, people talk about God's plans or prophecy, and a lot of Christian people get really hung up on those two things, prophecy and God's plan. I've lived my whole life listening to Christian people straining at gnats over the book of Revelation and trying to apply it today. I was a kid growing up, and boy, you had Christian preachers that swear up and down that, this thing being referenced in the book of Revelations meant the Soviet Union or meant Ronald Reagan or whatever else. Straining at gnats, trying to understand. And I think it's a misconception. I do. And this ties into what we just talked about with the lineage thing. And I think I can make it make sense. People view prophecy as like a crystal ball. You're looking into the future because, after all, it's a prophecy. So you want to know. You want to know what's going on, what's going to happen. It's crystal ball. God gives us crystal ball to look into the future. And I do believe that really does miss the point. After all, if prophecy was just simply a warning for the future, then the things wouldn't come true. You look at the prophets of the Old Testament warning the people, the kings and the people of Israel, that they were going to lose their country. Well, you would think they would heed that and say, well, we've got this warning, this prediction, this dire prediction of the future. We better take all these steps to make sure that doesn't happen. But they don't ever do that. Because they don't ever think it's now or anything. It's always a vague someday. Prophecy, and I think a lot of times this also ties in with God's will, and I'll get into that here in a minute, is something to be best understood in retrospect. You look at it when it has been completed. Just like our genealogy, our earthly genealogy of Jesus Christ, it's looked at in retrospect. You look and you trace back all the way back to the first man, Adam, and it gives us this perspective and understanding that those that are there at the time, they don't see it. They don't understand. They don't have that. By the way, if there's background noise, I'll try to edit it out. There's background noise. It's because it's raining pretty steady here while I record this week's show. Now, this understanding of prophecy as applies to God's will in our lives. It's kind of the same thing. Christian people will get obsessed with God's will. What's God's plan for my life? What's God's plan for my life? And what I have discovered is when you talk about God's plan for your life, it's best understood. You don't grasp it until you look at it in the retrospect. Now, when you talk about God's plan for my life, for your life, there's two plans. First, there's God's general plan for mankind. This applies to all of you. This applies to everybody. And his plan, his intention, is for you to spend this time, this limited time you have in this world, spiritually maturing. Just like every baby has the same plan while it's in the womb, is to mature and become mature enough that they can survive being birthed into this world. That is God's plan for everybody. God has a plan for everybody. You're right. And that plan, I can tell you what the plan is. What's God's plan for my life? I can tell you. God's plan for your life is for you to spiritually mature, to understand him as much as you can so that you are as prepared as you can be when you enter into the next life. I 100% guarantee you God's plan. There you go. There's God's plan for your life, because that's God's plan, general plan for every person. And that's the plan you always want to keep in mind, because it applies. You don't have to wonder. You don't have to guess. God is not vague about it. The Bible is not vague about it. God has a plan for every man on this earth, and that is for you to spiritually mature, grow. This is what was done in that section we just covered, from the first man, Adam, to Jesus Christ, was setting up his plan for you, that you spiritually mature, you come to know him, you are ready as you can be when you enter into the eternal existence, into the absence of time, into God's existence, his plane of existence. That is his plan. That's the plan. You don't have to wonder, what's God's plan? I'm telling you the plan. I done told you the plan. This is God's plan. This is his general plan for everybody. It applies to all of you. So you don't have to guess. Now, there are also specific things that God is accomplishing and using individual people for. He does this, you know, this doesn't apply to everybody. Most people, everybody is going to fall under plan number one, which is to spiritually mature, come to understand him, and grow spiritually. That applies to everybody. Now, in very specific instances, he is doing a thing and he wants certain people to do these things. He wants them to carry out. That's part of his plan. Now, we all, you know, everybody wants to think that, you know, yes, that's me. I'm the next Apostle Paul. No, you're not. No, I'm not. On rare occasions, he is doing specific things and as a person, you need to be there. Now, people will imagine that that applies to them. More than likely, it doesn't. Plan, the general plan, yes, that applies to you. That, because that applies to all of us. But more than likely, because I've grown up around Christian people, and they'll be obsessed with this. You know, I just got to figure out what God's plan for me is. Because, like, he has a specific roadmap for you as a person. You got to go do something. Well, more than likely, no. More than likely, you're just under the general plan. That's all you need to focus on. And that's plenty. I mean, don't act like that's an easy thing. Most people fail at that. Most people never even realize that and just go bumbling through life and are completely unprepared for what's to come and wind up being basically premature born. Focus on that first plan. You know what it is. Now, what if God does have something specific he wants you to do? There's, you got to be in this certain place. And people will say, I got to figure out what God's plan is. And they'll get obsessed. I've seen people obsessed with understanding what God's will is because I don't want to screw it up. And there's the problem. They have this attitude that God has a plan for them. God wants them to do something specific, not just the general plan. No, special. God wants them to do something specific. And they've got to figure it out, because if they don't figure it out, they're going to screw it up. God wanted me to be in this place, and he wanted me to be doing this thing at this time. And because I couldn't solve the riddle, because I couldn't figure out the puzzle, I screwed it up, and now I'm in trouble with God. It doesn't work that way. Look at Jonah. I think Jonah is a very interesting guy. I kind of identify in some ways with Jonah. Jonah is one of the because they're all kind of interesting in their own way. Jonah is a very interesting figure. God says, now here's Jonah, and God tells him, I got a specific thing. You got a regular Christian people running around today, and they like, I got to figure out what God wants me to do, because if I don't figure out what God wants me to do and I screw it up, I might be in trouble with God, because he wanted me to do it, and I would have gone and done it, but I couldn't go do it because I didn't understand, and then I screwed it up. Now God's mad at me. Stupid. Look at Jonah. God tells him, because God ain't going to just like, you're not going to hear a booming voice from heaven. God tells Jonah, I want you to go do this thing. And, you know, God has a plan. He wants this guy, Jonah, to go do this specific thing. And what does Jonah say? I ain't doing that. No, I ain't doing that. God, go find somebody else. There'd be all kinds of people out here wanting to do stuff for you. Go find somebody else. I ain't doing it. Even going so far as to run it off. Not only am I not doing it, Lord, not only am I telling you, go find somebody else, I'm not your guy. He run off to make it a point that he meant what he was saying. Go find someone else, God. I ain't doing it. I'm out. Not going to do it. And he runs off. But you know what? When the moment came, when he was supposed to be in this specific place, at this specific time to deliver this specific message, guess what? He was there doing it. He actively worked against it. And even though he did so, he ultimately wound up being where he's supposed to be. It's silly when people get hung up on, I got to figure out God has something he really wants me to do. I just know he does because I'm so important. I've got to solve the riddle and figure out where he, look, more than likely, no. Okay, I hate to break it to you. More than likely, no. More than likely, he's just going to live a normal life. But he does have a plan, the general plan that applies to everybody. You need to work on that. You'll have your hands full with that. Trust me. But understand, if by some chance he does have something specific, a specific thing for you to do at a certain time, at a certain place, a message for deliver, whatever, don't worry. You're not going to screw it up. Even if you do like Jonah and run off and attempt to not do it, you're going to be where he wants you to be at that time. Not because he takes away your free will, but because he exists outside of time. And he looks at it, and right here at this point in time, you're going, no, I'm not. I ain't going to do that. But he already sees where you're going to wind up. He already sees the decisions you're going to make. He sees what paths you're going to take. And he sees that fast forward to here, you're going to be there. You're going to wind up there. Again, he's not interfering. He never interfered with Jonah's free will. It was always Jonah's decision to make. But by the time it was over, Jonah wound up being exactly where he was supposed to be at the time he was supposed to be delivering the message he was supposed to deliver. Evangelicals get hung up on that a lot. God got a plan for me. I'm very, very important. God wants me to do this thing. I gotta be sure I don't screw it up. You're not. If you run off like Jonah and say, I'm purposely not doing it, you're gonna wind up. In other words, you can't screw it up. You can't screw up the plan. You do know the plan, the general plan. Focus on that. If you're supposed to be somewhere doing something, you'll be there. Don't worry about that. You're not going to screw up God's plan. But again, you don't understand it. In the rare instance that you are going to do something specific, you're not even going to understand how that worked until after the fact. Just like prophecy, after the fact. Then you look back and say, wow, you know, I actually did this thing specifically. And I wouldn't have been there to do that except for all these other decisions that I made back there that had nothing to do with, oh, I need to want. You were making independent decisions. Some of them might have been really big screw-ups, might have been sinful, but yet you wound up, but you won't understand that until you look back in retrospect. Prophecy is the same way. Prophecy is always meant to be understood looking back at it. It's not a crystal ball. It's not dire predictions for the future so that you can avoid the outcome. Now, it does serve as a warning. Jesus said, you look at the seasons, when you see the leaves changing, you know that fall is coming and colder weather is at hand in the very near future. But you don't know what day the first freeze is coming, but you know it's going to be winter at some point. That's the best you can do by looking at prophecy. You don't know when the first day of winter is going to be. Prophecy is understood looking back. Don't get hung up. I do. I get wore out. I talk very little. You noticed here, I talk very little on this show, like about the book of Revelation, because I Like I say, I've lived my whole life listening and seeing and hearing from people who are just obsessed with it. Just obsessed with the book of Revelation. You know, and they don't understand. Look, that gets you nothing. We are in the end times. We understand that because we just look around. Like Jesus said, you look around and you understand the season that you're in. But as far as trying to apply specific, this means, you know, like I said, I remember people swearing up and down that whatever symbology was in Revelation meant the Soviet Union. Where are those people now? Prophecy is understood in retrospect. You look back and you go, oh yeah, that all makes sense. Jesus Christ himself, when he walked the face of the earth, most of the people didn't get it. Even the disciples, really, if you read it closely, yes, they left everything and followed him. But after they'd been following him a long time, like he getting close to the time of crucifixion, and he'll tell them something and they just don't get it. Lord, show us the Father. Then we'll believe. And Jesus, exasperated, is like, do you still not get it? How do you not get it? To several points, Jesus says, how much longer will I have to put up with you? How much longer do I have to bear with you? Because you still don't get it. In retrospect, they understood it. In retrospect, when they sat down and wrote the Gospels, you know, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, there's your Gospels. When these men wrote the Gospels, they wrote about things they understood in retrospect. When they were then, they themselves were going through it, they didn't get it. They were like, Lord, show us Father, then we'll understand. When they wrote the books, they were looking back over it, and then they understood. They could say, oh, my gosh, this was the fulfillment of the prophecy as it was written. But when they were going through it at the time, they didn't get it because the prophecy was in the middle of being fulfilled. Does that make sense? Looking back, they got it. Looking back, they understood. They were involved in something at the time that was really, really deep, was a really, really huge thing. But when they were going through it, they didn't get it. They didn't understand that. Now, I was talking, I thought we'd get a little more into that general plan. The plan that I guarantee God has this plan for you. Telling you God's plan. Yeah, God's, you know, what I call the general plan, which started with Adam, ended with Jesus Christ. When God established this plan, was for you to spiritually mature. What does that mean, though? I mean, we do this here on this show, and you spend time reading your Bible and prayer and try to understand. You know, but what are some other aspects of this? Our spiritual growth, the things we go through. Spiritual maturity. I believe a big part of it. This is my belief. A huge part of this process of what we're going through in God's plan for your life and my life, the general plan that applies to all of us, is that we spend our lives, okay, our lives all the way up to the moment we leave this world, we are constantly, as believers now, the NPCs, they're not doing this. That's why they're stupid. They fall for everything. We are going, we constantly, in this working on ourselves, we are constantly, and I believe we do this up to the moment we die, we're constantly working, stripping off the lies. Stripping off, I was thinking of this the other day, and it's like peeling an onion. You know, peeling an onion. You get to that and you peel it off. And understand that this is all lies. You know, all the lies, regardless the topic, what I'm trying to say is the topic of the lie is irrelevant. You're peeling off the different layers of lies. And you get to something else, and then you look at this topic, and then you try to discern the truth. You're peeling off these different layers of lies because you peel off the lies and you expel them from your life. Once you understand their lie and you discard them, that brings you to a more Christ-centric life, closer to the truth. You know, Jesus said he was the truth. He didn't say only pertaining to this one subject. He is the truth, period. So it just makes sense that as you peel away the lies and discard them, the topic, again, the topic doesn't matter. Jesus didn't say I'm only the truth regarding certain things. He is the truth, period. So if you're discarding lies, regardless of the topics, you're getting closer to the truth. You're getting closer to Christ. This is a part of that spiritual maturity. This is part of that general God's plan that applies to each and every one of us. We peel off these lies. Now, this process is sometimes easier said than done, because I guarantee you, as you work at it, as you pick at it and peel things off, you are at some point going to hit a lie that is very difficult for you to get rid of. We've been lied to our entire lives, because I'm probably older than most of you. I say that because statistically speaking, I've probably been alive than most of you. Some of you I know are older than I am, but I'm saying most of you have probably been alive long enough, longer. And I can tell you, so if I can tell you, those of you who are younger, 100% guarantee it applies to you. We've been lied to our entire lives, like about everything. Don't let that send you off the rails and make you a schizo, but just understand that most things we have thought we understand, we've been lied to. We've been lied to our whole lives. And you start peeling that away. Again, the topic doesn't matter. You're just trying to get to the truth. You're going to get to something that you were told your whole life that you 100% believed was true. You're going to get to that, and you're going to start picking at it and looking at it, and you're going to find out that there's a certain element, at the very least, there's a certain element that actually, no, that's not true. I mean, it doesn't mean all of it, but there's a certain element. And when you've been told this and raised up in it, and you were told this and taught this by people in your life that you trusted, that weren't deceiving you out of malice, your parents taught you things that weren't true, not because like they were trying to trick you, they just didn't know themselves. But you're going to hit those things, and you're going to hit certain things that's very difficult to peel that off. This is an example, and this isn't necessarily even Christian-specific related. It's just truth. You have somebody, for instance, you're talking about just normal topics, historical topics, you know, and you'll sit there and talk about, you know, say 9/11 or this and that, and yeah, they're on board with you, and you're peeling this away, and they're like, yeah, Kennedy, totally, that was the CIA or whoever, you know, and they're peeling that, and they're good, you know, and they can see, and they're like, yeah, they lied to us and told us this and told us that. And then maybe you hit the Holocaust, and you're like, you know, I really think this gas chamber story is a little bit of a stretch, and they're going to be like, whoa, hold on, too far. The point is, you're going to hit a point like that for everybody. You're going to hit some topics in your life as you peel away and try to get to the truth that are going to be difficult, because you were told this your whole life. You spent decades of your life believing something. And then you find out that a certain aspect, at the very least, a certain aspect of that is actually not true. Now you got to pick that off. You know? And it can be really tough. You got to pick that off and accept things for what they are, and accept them for the reality and the truth they are. This is a part. This is this maturing process. This is that plan God has for you. And it's a process you go through this entire life. You want to be constantly just looking at things, looking for the truth of matter. And be careful. Be careful when you get to the truth of things, that you don't just like go off the rails, just get overboard on something. Just look at the truth of the matter. People get so emotional. It's a very feminine thing. Don't get over emotional about things. You know, I've seen so many people, like, over the years, you know, I mean, you know, here at Radio Albion, we did years ago, we did a lot of, you know, great shows with, you know, World War II revisionism. In other words, they say revisionism, and it sounds like you're just changing the story, but it wasn't. It was getting into, you know, the actual truth beyond the victor's propaganda of World War II. Dennis Wise did just an amazing amount of work in this topic, you know, and this, you know, getting to the truth. What was really the different motivating factors behind World War II? You know, and you know, it was very interesting. And over the years, you know, especially as a lot of that work was being done, and it was really good work being put out, just getting to, you know, the history of it. And, you know, you'd see so many people that when they got this information and absorbed this information, this truth, they would like go overboard, you know, they would become like obsessed. Hitler was suddenly Saint Adolf the First. I mean, he was just a man, you know. When you get to the truth, you know, through all the lies, they go overboard in this emotional overboard. You know, everything has to be weighed on the scales of yes, but what would Hitler do? And I'm always like, well, Hitler's dead. He ain't gonna do anything. You know, it doesn't matter to him. He's done. His time is over. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know. You want to stay sane, I guess is what I want to say. You're going to get certain things and big lies. And when you just look at the truth of it and just keep moving on. That's why I say Dennis Wise did really good work, because he can get all emotional about it and try to like create an idol out of Hitler. He's just like, well, look, this is what really happened. These certain things were going on. And actually this part of the story that we've been told our lives isn't true, because look, they did this and they were actually doing this and their plan was this. He didn't get all emotional with it and start turning it into some sort of idolatry. So look to the truth. Peel the stuff away. Look to the truth. In your life, and the topic doesn't matter. If you uncover, if you figure out truth, and this doesn't mean you go around, you have to go around looking for a conspiracy under everything. But it does mean you're constantly working and looking for the truth. And you're not going to run out of topics. Don't worry. You're not going to get to, I can guarantee 100%, you're not going to ever get to a point in your life that's like, I've figured it all out. I understand everything. You're not. And like I say, some truths are going to be harder for you to work through. It's okay. It's a process. It's why God has given us time. You know, we just don't want to waste it. If you don't ever bother, then you're wasting that time. He's given us time to work through this. You're going to run into things that you grew up. Your parents told you this is absolutely true. This is the way the world works. And again, don't get bitter about that. They weren't lying to you on purpose. They just didn't know. They were doing the best they could. They just didn't know. Don't get all like, oh, my mom and dad lied to me. They told me that, I don't know, women were all princesses on a pedestal. And if I just treated one nice enough, then they would fall in love and dedicate themselves to me. And it turns out it doesn't work that way at all. The hell was wrong with them? They tricked me. No, they didn't. They just didn't know any better. Going to get to things. They're tough. They're tough for you to accept. And there's where the work is. You're carrying out, but you know what? You're carrying out God's plan for you. This is it. It's nothing that's going to be written about in a book of the great things you did, but it is what God's plan is for you. You're carrying it out day to day. Stripping away the lies. You're going to hit things. It's going to be tough. That's the work. There you go. Get at it. Strip it away. Finally get to the truth of it. Try to understand these things, and you have a clearer view of the world. And ultimately, you have a clearer view of God, a clearer understanding of the Lord. We're going to wrap up on that note. Hope you enjoyed all of today's show. I hope especially the Christian-specific segment. I do believe, and I think you all would agree, this is the centerpiece of the show. I really appreciate every one of you that tune in every week for these discussions. I really do appreciate it. I hope you enjoy your week, and I hope to see you back here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.